Hi, everybody, and welcome to Will and Amala Live, except it's not Will and Amala Live today because Will's not here, and we do have a very, very special guest who is going to be talking about a project that he was very much involved in here at PragerU, a restricted short documentary. Now, big tech restriction is a really big issue right now, and it's a censorship issue for both sides. It doesn't really matter whether or not you lean right or left. It just seems to be a growing problem. According to big tech, you can't talk about... You can't talk about. It's ridiculous. I just keep getting censored.
I can't believe that we can't talk about any of those things that you just listed. It's absolutely insane. But I'm very grateful that we have none other than Dave Rubin of The Rubin Report here in studio with us today. And he himself is going to expose everything terrible that big tech is doing right here, right now. So, Dave, what is big tech doing that is so awful?
Oh, well, I'm very excited to talk about you know what and the other thing and that thing that they're not letting us do.
And scene, guys.
Just how we drew it up.
We love our ridiculously cheesy, horrible skits at the beginning of the show, and you guys love them too for whatever reason. But
that was a skit? Holy cow.
It feels almost too real to even joke about at this point, doesn't it? But we have Dave Rubin here. Dave Rubin, thank you for being on the show.
I'm glad to be here, but I do feel like I'm under a tremendous amount of hair pressure with Will not being here because he's got like that 8-foot hair. And I feel like I'm doing all right today,
you know,
but maybe if I had known he wasn't going to be here, I would have upped it a little bit.
You know, you should have never said those words. Will is going to thrive off of that. The hot air that will fill his head from you saying that is going to last
for
years.
The hot air that will fill his hair, most likely. Yeah.
That's very, very true. Now, you got featured in one of our documentaries. It's called Restricted. It's about big tech censorship. I want to play a little clip and then we'll get into talking about it.
I'm Dave Rubin. I'm the host of The Rubin Report and I'm the co-founder of Locals.com. It's really weird, actually, because, you know, these things are all free and you can sign up for them in 2 seconds. So it's like, oh, wow, this is awesome. It's the Wild West. We can do whatever we want, whenever we want, and nobody's our boss. And we can come and go as we please. It's all fantastic. And that's sort of the way it was for those first few years of YouTube, maybe even for a decade of YouTube, actually. And then slowly, when you start doing some interesting things, you start talking about free speech or start going against the grain or being a little politically incorrect, then slowly things start turning on you. You start noticing when you do things that are more controversial, certain videos seem like they really get depressed, or you're on Twitter and, you know, you say something that goes against the progressive orthodoxy of the day and suddenly you get 3 retweets instead of, you know, 300 retweets or whatever it might be.
I'm Marissa Streit. I'm the CEO of PragerU. In 2000...
You talk about something interesting, and I think it's something that people forget, that YouTube was not always like this.
Mm-mm.
YouTube started out as sort of a free-for-all. You could post whatever you wanted on YouTube, and it would just stay on there regardless. And then the censorship sort of crept in. What was your first experience with censorship, if you can recall?
What was my first? Well, the truth is, I probably don't even know what the first was, right? Because I always say it's not the things that they can do and that they're obviously doing that I'm worried about. Like, it's not like when they really deboost a certain post or when you know you're shadow banned or suddenly your videos are really crushed or whatever it might be. It's not that, or they don't go out to the feed, you know, all the stuff that we, you know, this is like insider baseball stuff for us, all the stuff that we know that we have to churn through every day. But the average person that's consuming our stuff, they sometimes forget, you know, it's like they have other lives, they have jobs and like they have other hobbies and stuff. And then suddenly, you know, someone will message me and be like, you know, Dave, I just realized I'm subscribed to your channel. I've clicked the notification bell for all your videos. I haven't seen one of your videos in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I forgot, you know, I forgot to check. And you can't blame people. They're doing other things.
Exactly.
I think the first time I really noticed something was going on was probably around the adpocalypse thing, which is probably about 3 years ago now, where suddenly, you know, because they claimed that there were all these right-wing, scary right-wing people saying scary right-wing things.
Yeah, I gotta say, you're so scary, dude.
And I'm very scary, and I know that. And, you know, people are always telling me how scary and mean I am and all that. And I was included in that adpocalypse thing, which is basically where they just, you know, the advertisers basically dropped out for a little while, which is fine. If a company so chooses not to run ads on something, that we believe in the free marketplace, right? We believe in capitalism and competition. But what happened after that was it suddenly seemed that if you talked about certain things, usually related to free speech, actually, if you talked about free markets, basic basic conservative stuff, I would say, the type of stuff that PragerU puts out there, the type of stuff that our friend Ben Shapiro puts out there, things of that nature, that the views would just disappear, where things that I was putting up before that would get 3 million views, they would get, you know, 200,000 views, and people would then, I'd be looking in the comments and people would say, oh, I didn't get this in my feed, et cetera, et cetera. And the other problem with the ad thing is you have to think about censorship at sort of many levels. It's not just that sometimes they could just ban you outright or delete all your stuff or all that.
Right.
With ads, they can do something a little more perverse, which is, oh, we'll put ads on this content. And then you look at numbers, right? You look at numbers, you go, oh, I'm making money when I do this type of content. Well, if they suddenly say, we're not going to put ads on that stuff, you might censor yourself because you got to pay your bills and you want to buy food and maybe pay your rent. So that's not censorship in a traditional sense, but there are ways that they're manipulating us that we don't know. And notice in no part of this did I say I necessarily want the government to come in and fix it. I think we can talk about that if you want, but my preference always is we got to build new things. We just got to be sort of slimmer and trimmer than them. And competition, man. I mean, that's really what it's all about.
Which is tough with the kind of oligarchy that they've created around big tech right now. And they say, you know, the solution to mass psychosis is to build a parallel society that functions the exact same, but just does it better.
Yeah.
How do we start to do that? You have an endeavor that you're working on, an app that you are co-founded now. How is that working out for you?
Yeah. Well, first I'll say it's tough.
Okay.
Right. Like before we even get into locals, like it's tough. We all know what happened with Parler, you know, after the January 6th thing, they basically Amazon just blew up their servers. Everyone uses Amazon, pretty much Amazon AWS as like the underbelly of the internet. That's where everyone's hosting everything pretty much. Yes, you can have your own server farms, but like it's sort of the ubiquitous thing of the internet.
Exactly.
And after January 6th, they wanted to find somebody to blame for what happened. And they said, Parler, you know, these guys, they have 23 million people up.
That's their meeting spot.
That's their meeting spot. And they're the new guy in town, right? Because they weren't a little operation with 4 million users. They had 23 million. Like they were becoming a real threat to the Twitter situation and YouTube and Instagram and all that. So they were the very easy one to just take out and blow up. But when that happened, I actually think in retrospect, we'll all look at it as a seminal, possibly good moment, because even though it sucks what they did, and I think it's bad business practice and all that kind of stuff, it woke up a lot of people, because that wasn't just, oh, we're taking out Alex Jones.
Right.
Which, by the way, I don't think he should have been taken out. I think, in my opinion, you leave these people up. If they break the law, they got a bigger problem than Twitter or YouTube or whatever. And in retrospect, Alex Jones actually got a lot of stuff right now, which is such a which is such a weird thing to say.
It is.
Hold on there. Hold on.
The Alex Jones was right. You know, we can't say that.
Yeah, we definitely can't say that. So it woke enough people up that it was like, oh, we better start figuring out some other ways to do things. So 2 years before, I had started the adventure of creating locals. And really what happened was I kind of saw all this coming because I've been doing the YouTube game for a while.
Yep.
And I was like, well, wait a minute. What do I need to kind of free myself from these guys? I need a place that'll host my videos, that'll host my audio.
Mm-hmm.
I want a slick app so I can get push notifications out to my fans so that they actually, if I put up a video, it's gonna actually pop up on their phone. We wanna be able to communicate, live chat with people, live video stream, all of that stuff. We started building the company. I literally just said on my show, hey, if there's any people with money out there, we're starting this company and we need some help.
Yeah.
And people reached out to me, and that's how we started getting funding at the beginning. And then the really crazy part is that after January 6th, all of the people that I had gone into offices and said, you know, fund this, that were always, everybody always was like, oh, it's a great idea. Of course you should be doing that. Nobody pushed back on the idea. Nobody pushed back on the tech. But they were always like, ah, you know, Dave, your thought of is kind of right and conservative now. And, you know, can we put money into that? Like, they don't quite say it, but they're saying it, right? And after January 6th, suddenly everyone realized the temperature just got much hotter.
Mm-hmm.
It went from like a cool like 69 degrees to like 87 degrees and humid.
Yes.
And suddenly everybody was like, ah, it's hot in here. And then suddenly we started getting some of the people that we wanted. So we have great investors who are helping us. Not only, because it's not just about the money, it's about the philosophical issues behind how you do this, the legal issues, the ethical issues, the technological issues, obviously. So we've built something that's really nice. And I would recommend people check out locals.com. And it's just a piece, by the way. It's, mm-hmm. I'm not sitting here going I've solved the problems of the internet.
Yeah, no.
It's just a piece to it that is. Parallel economy that you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, it's a start because there's so many. I mean, it, obviously big tech is not the only problem when it comes to the left overtaking things and then subsequently ruining them. Yeah. We live in California, so we know that. There's so many different parallels that we have to work on. Locals is just one of those, so I applaud you for doing that. Now, a lot of conservatives you know, fight back at us and say, well, why are you even on Facebook? Why are you on Twitter? Yeah. Why are you on Instagram? I'm sure you get that all the
time.
Oh,
yeah. I hate that one. Well, it's so stupid. It's so thoughtless, actually, because you don't always concede ground. You don't mm-hmm. always just give up
absolutely.
And constantly retreat. By the way, there are times when it might a retreating sort of tactically does make sense. Mm-hmm. Like you're like, there's not much left here.
Right.
I know we're going to talk about California. Like
we are.
maybe a tactical retreat of California makes sense. But in terms of, you know, you want to get your stuff out there. Like to me at this point, I'm leveraging the hell out of YouTube and Twitter mm-hmm. and Facebook and everything else until they say to me, you can't be here anymore. And I have no doubt that that will come, whether I say something about an election or I say something about a vaccine. You know, right before I went off the grid, you know, I do my August off the grid situation mm-hmm. with no phone or anything for a month. But the day before I did that, I was banned on Twitter for saying that vaccine mandates were coming.
I've got the tweet right
you got
here.
It? Oh, man, you guys are professionals. Let's see it.
We are.
All right.
Here's
let's see.
From Dave Rubin. Reminder, Twitter banned me for saying they want a federal vaccine mandate back in July. The tweet reads, they want a federal vaccine mandate for vaccines, which are clearly not working as promised just weeks ago. People are getting and transmitting COVID despite vax. Plus, now they're prepping us for booster shots. A sane society would take a pause. We do not live in a sane society.
Can I pat myself on the back right there?
I mean, none of that's coming true at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I made three claims there, and all of those claims are obviously right. Yeah. Right? Vaccine
insane.
Mandate, right?
Done.
Happening.
Done.
Vaccines obviously not working the way they are supposed to work.
Done.
And now we're all getting booster shots, or if you so choose to get the booster shot or whatever.
Yeah.
So they banned me for that, and then only, and this is to your point about why you don't just run, mm-hmm. only because I had locals, so I was still able to get my audience to start tweeting about it and talking to people. And then because I'm obviously connected to people like you guys at PragerU, I got people to start tweeting about it. And then at some point, you can get something to critical mass where these guys, and they're the bad guys in this situation, where even they will suddenly be like, oh man, maybe we stepped in it this time because nothing he said there, because I had the receipts of Biden basically hinting at the mandate and why are we all getting booster shots if, you know, if it's really working, like the receipts were there. So you just got to push and push and push and push. And I think if you do, you know, that David guy beat Goliath. So it's like, we got a chance.
Right. And not to mention, you know, there's so many people who are on these platforms who are completely impressionable, who are sitting in the fog of everything that's happening right now and looking for a light, looking for somebody to lead them to the truth. And if you can be that person on that platform, then by all means, be that person. But now you see conservatives who are just constantly retreating and conceding ground and going, well, we'll just give them that. It'll quell all the unrest for a little while. And I feel like the conservative party is getting a lot more progressive.
Yeah. I mean, well, this is the thing that, you know, a lot of conservatives are saying now. It's like, well, what did conservatives conserve?
Mm-hmm.
Now, ironically, from where I sit, it's like conservatives are the last ones conserving liberalism at this point. I had Tucker Carlson on my show recently, and that's what he was arguing. And Dennis Prager has argued this with me, that in many ways he still is an old school liberal, but that has nothing to do with modern liberalism, obviously, meaning he believes in rationality and the individual and free thought and an open, tolerant society. That's just not what, obviously, the progressives are doing now. But the more that you give these guys, and I get the impulse. The impulse is like, feed them a little something, and then they'll be satiated. Yeah. Like, there'll be enough. But but they're like the aliens in Independence Day. Remember?
Okay.
Remember
this
when
is a strong reference. I'm ready for it.
Remember when Bill Pullman has the psychic connection with the alien Independence Day, and then they ask him, they're like, what was the alien saying?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, they're here to destroy all of us. They're going from planet to planet, and they're just here to take all our resources and destroy us.
Yes.
That in many ways is what the progressives are here to do. And I really mean that. They are here to destroy this society. They're basically telling us that they don't like America. They don't like the founding. They don't like capitalism. They don't like math. 2 + 2 is now
5 instead of 4, and 3.5 trillion now equals 0. I mean, this is spectacular stuff. So, like, they're here to do all these things. And when someone tells you what they're here to do, you should believe them.
Yeah, you really should. And it is so explicit. I don't want to hear anybody who says, well, no, they don't say that. They don't say that. Look at when it comes to our founding, just the founding fathers are our key documents to the founding of this country. Apparently, those are old pieces of paper that mean nothing, and freedom means nothing. And the founding fathers were white supremacist Nazis.
It's so stupid because, look, especially you, like, and I know we don't like playing the identity game,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Your skin color happens to be black.
Yes.
Is there anything happening in America that is stopping you from doing anything that you want to do?
No. And funny enough, I'm sitting right in front of a camera running my own show right now.
Yeah. So. You are literally living your dream this very moment,
yes.
Fighting for the principles that allowed you to fight that dream. It doesn't mean that every single one of your ancestors that were in this country were treated perfectly, nor my ancestors, nor anyone's. And it doesn't mean that the whole thing is bad. You know, it's like this idea, they've done something very, very twisted where it's like everyone before them was so wrong and backwards. And it's like, you know what? I think I'm a pretty decent guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I'm much better, if better at all, than my father or my grandfather or my great-grandfather, my grandfathers who both fought in World War II, my great-grandfather who came here with nothing and lived in a tenement house with six brothers and sisters. Father died at 2 years old, like, you know, had to fight for pennies basically to survive. Like, am I so great? You know, and it's like they've done this thing where it's like, forget everyone before you. We're evolved now. Boys are girls, girls are boys, 3.5 trillion equals zero. We know everything. And that's dangerous, man. That's really dangerous.
Forget everyone before you, but if your ancestors committed crimes, they're also your crimes, which is amazing to me because it sounds very much like North Korea to me. But yet we're here in the United States. Now, if this progresses, let's say 200 years down the line, if this ideology persists, what are the transgressions that we're committing right now that our future selves are going to be?
Oh, man, they'll come for everything. I mean, literally everything. There's nothing that I can't even imagine what they will come for, because it's a movement of destruction. It's not a movement of creation. I mean, the idea, creation comes from you as the individual. You figure out how you can live for yourself.
Yep.
And by doing that, it does that. People say, oh, well, that's somehow selfish. You're thinking about yourself. But it's like, no, if you think about yourself first, well, then you know what happens? You might meet somebody. You might fall in love with somebody. And then you two have a life together. Then you might have kids and you might teach them some good things. And you know what? You've got parents and brothers and sisters and families, and you start building something cool that has some value to it. And then hopefully with tradition and whatever else, you can hand that down to another generation. And that starts with the individual, but we have completely thrown that away.
Yeah.
And it's the most fundamental basic building block of all Western societies, but specifically the United States. And we've basically said, no. We'd rather have a bunch of politicians who've never done anything good for anyone except get rich on our back and tell us how much we need them and take more and more of our stuff. We've now said to them, you can tell us how many times a week we have to get vaccinated, and you can tell us whether we're going to go out of our houses or what we have to wear on our faces. And it's like, yes, Nancy Pelosi should have something to do with my life.
Exactly. Right, right. And we had Zuby on the show earlier this week, and he made this very interesting point, is that when people get frightened or they're fear-mongered by the media or they get introduced to propaganda, you have two distinct choices you can make. And that is, one, to look up and go, somebody tell me what to do and somebody tell me how to live my life. And the second one is to look inward and look at yourself as an individual and go, well, I know what to do because I am myself. And so many people just took this shot of fear and just looked straight up.
They look up and they also think that somehow humans who are imperfect, we're all imperfect, obviously, but only if you could get enough of us to believe the same thing, we could create a thing that's better than us.
Yep.
Doesn't really work. I think that can work at very micro levels where you could have a small community of people that could all come together and build things. Of course, groups can come together over shared ideas and values and things like that and build things.
Absolutely.
Of course. But the idea that, like, all of these people will create something perfect, you know, that's what socialism and communism always promotes
Utopia.
And promises. But you got to kill an awful lot of people to get there, because suddenly you're like, oh, man, he's not perfect and she's not perfect. And that one, you know, wants to go out without the mask. And this one voted for that orange guy.
But once we're all gone, maybe it will be perfect.
Well, that is.
Maybe we should just, you know, see ourselves out.
That is the ultimate answer. Yeah.
Well, let's.
Don't give him any ideas.
Yeah, I know. Maybe we cut that out.
Well, is a form of that happening now, though, with on the internet with censorship and stuff?
Absolutely.
They're stamping out the dissenting voices and the people who are not beating the drum of the mainstream narrative. And so in a way, they're making a utopia and forcing it virtually online by stamping out the voices that would that do think for themselves or are independent from the mainstream
narrative.
Very good
point.
Well, that's interesting because I think partly what's happening in society right now really is a war between the virtual world and the old school world, mm-hmm. the real world where people are actually, you know, in our carbon bodies. Like that war is starting because in the virtual world, it's sort of all based on thought. And we can get everything out real quick. We can make videos. We can get everybody outraged. Everyone's hating on, you know, all that. And then it's leaked into reality where now, I mean, look what's happened just in the last week. The really crazy, I would say, this woman is pretty much a crazy person. Mm-hmm. The governor of New York, who nobody voted for, right? She was installed after they took out Cuomo. Mm-hmm. She just fired 83,000 healthcare workers because they made the choice not to get vaccinated. These are the same people we were told are the greatest heroes of all time. Yeah. We put it all on the line to save all of us. And now we're firing them because they don't want to do this. Do we have any evidence that anyone's going to a hospital and getting COVID from a healthcare? But even if you ask these things, these are the questions that they slowly will not want you asking.
They go, oh, I think I'm going to delete that tweet. I think I'm also going to unverify you and I'm going to delete your account. But the hospitals are flooded. We had to fire all these nurses, but the hospitals are flooded and we can't
handle
it.
I don't want to say where we are right this moment, but there is a hospital about a mile, not even a mile from here, half a mile from here.
Right.
It is empty has been empty this entire time. Yeah. I think last week, we checked the numbers on my show this morning. Last week, you know how many people in LA died of COVID?
No idea. How many?
Ballpark, you guys want to guess? Got anything? Ballpark?
It's making me want to go low.
Very, very low. I want to say like two.
A few hundred?
Yeah.
A few hundred. That's interesting.
I want to say a couple.
Scott?
Scott?
Two. You were right.
I said two. Okay, there we go.
You were right. Yeah. Two people.
Yeah.
But don't trust me. Don't trust me.
Right.
It's on the computer.
Right. And that's the amazing part is that no matter the wealth and the abundance of information that we have right in front of our faces, computers in our pockets, people don't even care to look up actual facts. They take the propaganda, they suck it in, and they go, okay, now let me just regurgitate that, but change the words.
Hasn't it exposed something really dark about humans? Like, don't you think a little bit differently about humanity now than, say, a year and a half ago? Like,
absolutely.
I go to the supermarket. I mean, I don't really go anywhere anymore, but like once in a blue moon, I have to get something.
Right.
But I pretty much live in my bunker at this point. But when I go to the supermarket and I see these people with the mask and they look sort of glazed over, mm-hmm. like robots, you know, just doing their thing, and nobody realizes why they're wearing the mask anymore, but everyone's just afraid. They're just afraid of being the person that someone's going to look at and say something mean. And it's like, you know, the Nazi analogy is way overused, obviously, but you can sort of start to see how this stuff could happen.
Right.
Because we went from calling half the country racist, which is what the mainstream media was doing for years during Trump, now they're racist and they're diseased.
Mm-hmm.
You think you might do some bad things to those people if you had the power?
Yeah. What do you think the next step of that is? And I think, you know, a lot of people on both sides of the aisle get angry when people use the Nazi comparison. They say it's not an apt comparison. But what other comparisons do you use? There's a lot of other, you know, genocides and other things that have happened and atrocities that have happened. And if you look at the building blocks of them, they all start with these sorts of
things. Well, because no one thinks they're going to be a Nazi, right? No one,
of course not.
Whoever was like, if you took the most prototypical Nazi foot soldier in 1941, if you would have said to them in 1936, do you know that you're actually going to round up Jews and shoot them and put them into ditches and things like that? Of course they'd say no. Of course they'd say no. They didn't. Right. They weren't born evil. But the evil collectivist ideas that can turn people against people and make you not look at a human being, but look at, oh, that is a set of ideas that is against me. And now, again, now they're diseased too, and they might share that disease with me.
Yeah.
You can get people to do awful things. Look what's going on in Australia. People are literally walking their dogs and being attacked by military members. I mean, this is, again, find it online while you still can. You know, literally officers choking. You saw the video of them choking that woman. It's like, we're choking you. We don't want you to choke on phlegm because of COVID, but we're going to literally choke you with our hand
in
the name of health and safety.
Gosh. And people look, and still, that information's right in front of people's faces. The videos are there. They go viral, and people still look at it and go, well, that's not the United States.
But you know what?
Couldn't be us.
Right. That's not us yet. But we should be looking at what's happening in Canada. We should be looking at what's happening in Australia and going, you know, they're a little bit ahead of us, ahead or behind, depending on which way you want to look.
Yeah, right.
But that it's happening in front of our eyes. And think about it this way. Why isn't that shown on CNN? Why does CNN... Exactly.
Great question.
Why does CNN not find it interesting that Australia basically is a police state now?
Mm-hmm.
Why do they not find it interesting that in Canada, churches are still closed and they're arresting preachers?
Yep.
We don't find that interesting in America, but yeah. we'll argue about what Kristen Sinema had for lunch
exactly.
or something like that. Yeah,
because the media conglomerate, they know where this is going in America, and they know that if you expose this to the Americans too soon, they'll realize that it's going to happen here, and then yeah. maybe we're gonna have a revolution. We're gonna have to quell. But now they don't have that.
Not yet.
No.
But by the way, to get that to the censorship thing, mm-hmm. that's also why more censorship is on the horizon, and it's coming pretty quickly. And
yep.
I think probably even more quickly than even we'd want to believe, because that chasm between what the mainstream will allow you to see and what we're seeing online, that can't exist much longer.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's too wide. It would be one thing if it was like, oh, mainstream is kind of lying about a little bit of stuff, and then you can expose a little bit of it online. But now the chasm is so wide where they lie about everything. We played mm-hmm. a clip on my show this morning. Sheila Jackson Lee is a rep congresswoman from Houston. She's at a hearing talking about our sovereign and secure southern border. And it's only right-wing media that telling you that it isn't. Well, we played that clip of her saying that. And then you're not going to believe this. We found videotape online and we played a video of people running through the border, thousands
yeah.
of people, no social distancing, no mask. And it's like, they can't allow that to exist much longer because that is too much. There's too much cognitive dissonance there that they will have to do. So I think things could get much worse very quickly, actually.
Yeah, let's talk about the much worse, the worst case scenario. Let's talk about.
You guys got any booze here?
We actually do.
Yeah,
but
yeah, what's going on? Every time you come to my house, there's a lot of booze.
There is. That is know? Very, very true.
All right.
But let's talk about the worst case scenario. And let's assume we all get swiped off the internet. All of us are alt-right extremists. We get taken off the internet. What do we do? What is then our avenue for getting our information out there for changing minds, for waking people up?
Well, first I would say, before that happens, people need to figure out what their off-ramps are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why I created Locals. PragerU is on Locals. Like,
yep.
we're really blowing up. There's other, you know, you can be on Rumble instead of YouTube. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, there's there are some options right now to keep you, like, sort of roughly safe.
Okay.
But we do need, it's what you said earlier, we need a parallel economy. I mean, I truly believe that at this point. We need different banks. We need different educational institutions. We literally need different restaurants.
Yep.
I really mean that. Like, you will just go, if right now in LA, everything's still freaking mask and you got all that whole thing. We need people that will say, I'm going to open a restaurant and I'm just going to keep this thing open and I'm going to put my butt on the line and are cops going to really show up and arrest me? Maybe they will. Or maybe we all have to cede this ground. I mean, that's what
yeah.
we were talking about right before we got on, is like, maybe we have to cede the ground and let them burn what should be an incredible city because of this weather and the geography
mm-hmm.
and everything else. And that entertainment once was good and it was all birthed here. Like, there should be something so awesome about LA
yep.
and everyone knows that there isn't anymore. Like, that's a pretty depressing reality. But there are other places. And I think we will just have to build new things. What PragerU does for education,
mm-hmm.
what Daily Wire, what The Blaze, what they do for news.
Right.
Like, we just have to keep building things. But it's like, yes, they will still come for you every which way. So they'll go for the servers. They'll go for the payment processors. God only knows what else they could do.
Exactly.
As I said at the beginning, like, I'm always worried not about the things I can think of. It's
mm-hmm.
the other stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that is. And they do.
They do. And
that's
we have personal experience with that. I mean, look at everything that happened with PayPal. And, you know, these banks are all working on all of the CRT stuff and the gender theory. And they're working on alienating people out of their services. And we had our server on JW Player and they nixed us
yeah.
immediately and had no real explanation for as to why they did it. Of course, we know why they did it, but there's so many different ways that this could go wrong. And even when we try to retreat and create our own parallel, it can go wrong again. So.
Sure, but there is a silver lining there, which
yeah.
is, since I've gone dark this whole time,
yes.
right, I'm giving you a dark,
give me some
I'm giving
optimism,
you a dark Dave Rubin, I'll lighten
yeah.
it up a little bit. The solution is that as we build things,
mm-hmm.
we will build things based on competency. We will hire engineers based on competency, not mm-hmm. on skin color. We will hire doctors to perform heart surgery and brain surgery based on skill,
mm-hmm.
not on gender or sexuality. So if we do it properly, if enough of us are brave enough to be like, yeah, let's really self-select out.
Yep.
And then what will happen is we'll build good things, right? And the things that they build will crumble.
Yeah.
They will crumble because look what's happening across, look at all of our educational institutions. They're all crumbling because they imported those bad ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So let them have those things. Now, the thing that sucks if you live in California, it's like, I don't think necessarily the stormtroopers are coming to grab people out of their beds tomorrow. But slowly there will be a degrade of the system. We're seeing that more homelessness, the roads suck, you know, yep. blah, blah, blah.
Crime, yeah.
Right. It will just sort of, it'll slowly, slowly escalate. But then again, it's always like it slowly escalates and then it really escalates. And, yes. and where are we on that map? I don't think anybody really knows.
Yeah, and at what point do we get trapped in the state that's not serving us at all? Which is a question we get asked a lot on the show. Is California worth saving? And is it worth saving from the inside? Because we're both on the inside here right
You know,
now.
I told, everyone knows this already, but when the lockdowns first started, so, mm-hmm. you know, this is like maybe a month in, so, you know, something like March or maybe April of 2020, mm-hmm. I had Michael Knowles and his wife over for dinner, and we're having dinner, and we were really pissed about California, and like, we were just like, all right, we're both going to get out of here. And then we had some whiskey. And after about 2 hours of whiskey, we were both like, no, we're going to stay. We're going to fight and stay. The next morning, I kid you not, the next morning, the Daily Wire announced they were moving to Nashville.
Hilarious.
And he was like, whoop, I didn't know, but okay, I guess like, we're out of here. Bye. But I said I would fight. I would stay and fight. And then when the recall happened in Cali, I mm-hmm. was like, I now really have something to fight for the mm-hmm. next year. And I gave it everything I had. Obviously, I thought that Larry Elder was the guy to fix this thing. I think he is a good, decent man, and having nothing to do with the color of his skin. And he was treated horribly mm-hmm. by the media. The way that big tech even manipulated it, when I was Googling him at the height of the recall, you put his name in Google and like 12 of the first 15 stories all hit pieces. He's the black face of white supremacy. You know the drill.
Yep.
So the question is, it went poorly, to say the least, the recall. Obviously, it did not go the way I wanted. And is there a glimmer of hope here?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is.
Yep.
I honestly don't, except that it's 82 and sunny every day.
Yeah.
And it's not humid.
It's true. And I, you know, we have this discussion all the time.
Yeah.
And at a certain point you think, I think I need to leave these people to really feel the weight of their actual policy changes, feel the weight of their ideology, yeah. and that you don't feel it until the boot kicks you, the military boot gets you. And that's the unfortunate reality of it, but it is the reality of it.
Yeah.
And to be somebody who sat in the space and fought for so long and to hear you say it is really interesting.
No, I know. Well, I think a lot of people kind of look to me like, oh, Ruben's like, got some hope for Cali, because
mm-hmm.
you know, I, for the whole year of lockdowns and everything, I was on Fox basically every day. I was doing my show and everyone was always asking me about Cali, and my thing was, well, the recall's working, we got 2 million signatures, we got a great candidate. Like, there was always this hope thing. Now it's like, not only did it go poorly, but you know, a day after, literally the day after the recall, what's the first thing that Newsom does? He makes sure that in LA they put new mask mandates on, even though nobody's getting sick here anymore. And then what did he do just 3-4 days ago? Now it's all mail-in voting, where you literally, if you put your envelope up to a freaking soft light like this,
yeah.
you can see right through it. Do you think maybe that would lend itself to cheating? So it's like, if you don't believe in the machinery anymore,
mm-hmm.
a system only works if we believe in it, or
sure.
at least if enough of us believe in it.
Right.
I don't believe in it, so...
Yeah, maybe that's the only option. And it's so another part that's interesting and a part that we share is we did not always think like this.
No, we did not. I used to be a complete nutbag.
Yeah, me too. If 3 years ago, I would have been on the other side of this argument
yeah.
and probably yelling at you and calling you an extremist.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, so more than ever, like I said, everybody's living in this haze. And if you're not, if you're politically apathetic, that now's a greater time than ever to change people's minds and to grab people. What do you think for you is key to changing minds in this craziness?
Well, I'll give you another silver lining, which mm-hmm. is that the more hysterical they get and the more yes. they tell young people to wear masks and don't go out and don't see your friends and don't date and don't do any of the things that young people need to do,
mm-hmm.
like young people are waking up. Right. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like I know
yeah.
some kids in college and I go to colleges and they're frustrated with this. I was like, can you curse? I can't really curse. I don't want to upset the good people. Of
Nothing
you.
Has ever slipped out on this show.
Yeah.
yeah
know. you know, so because people yearn to be free, people yearn to think for themselves. They
mm-hmm.
really do. And that's why these people are so hysterical about everything,
yep.
because it's anti-human what they're doing, but people want to be free. So I do think they are red pilling an awful lot
yep.
of people, the more hysterical they become. And when you hear them say these crazy things, $3.5 trillion won't cost us anything.
Mm-hmm.
And what they mean by that is it won't add to the deficit. Now, first off, that's a lie because we're always borrowing money in the first place. So if you spend money, you're spending more than you've got. But what their point is, oh, no, we're just going to take it from the rich people and the corporations. Well, you know, if you take money from somebody else to pay something, it still costs something. Yes. You just stole it from somebody else, but it still costs. You go to Chipotle and like, they're like, all right, you want that burrito? It's 10 bucks. And you punch the guy behind you and take his money and give it to, it still costs 10 bucks. Yeah. It didn't cost me anything. I just punched this rich idiot.
Yeah.
Like, so everything they say is a lie. And I think the more we expose those lies, the better it is. And you know, the truth will set you free. Like that really is it. I think our message is so much better. And I would turn this on you and say, you know, since I sort of had this evolution or this shift, whatever you want to call it, I can tell you people on the right, libertarian, traditional conservatives, even religious conservatives, whatever it is, people on the right are so much nicer, so much more pleasant, so much funnier, so much more joyous and generous of spirit. And it's not like that on the left.
It's just
they are endlessly miserable. They are oddly competitive about nothing. They always want to be proven right. And what I've come to realize really is that it's something like this. It's basically conservatives, whatever this thing is that we're now part of, conservatives want to understand the world and liberals or lefties want to control the world. And that's a very fundamentally different thing. I do not want to control the world. I fully accept the world was here before me and will be here after me. I'm okay with that. So I want to understand it as much as I can when I'm here. I don't want to control it, but they want to control it. And how we negotiate that is going to be the tricky part.
You're absolutely right. All that just gave me flashbacks to my former self. And I was miserable. Yeah. I was so angry. And when you're on the left, specifically when you work for the left, so that was a specific experience for me. But you wake up every day to search for injustice and to search for something wrong, even where there's nothing, because oppression is currency on the left. You have to wake up and look for it and look for it and look for it. And of course, it's going to make you angry.
Yeah.
And you're just a miserable person. And when people don't mimic the things that you're saying and they don't approve of what you're saying, the defensiveness and just the sheer anger that you feel being on the left is nowhere to be seen on the right.
No, it really isn't. And that doesn't mean that everyone on the right is so perfect and so great and that we don't have disagreements and things like that. But I think there's a tacit understanding like, oh, the world exists. It exists. It's a big thing that has evolved over time and humans are flawed and believe different things. And like the best we can do is kind of manage that while we're here and hope that, you know, good ideas prevail. The left is very different on that. If only you gave Bernie, who's never done anything, Bernie in 30-something years of Congress, I think he has, or in the Senate, he has one bill, I think, attached to his name, which I think had something to do with a post office or something. He's never worked a real job, but he knows that if you just made sure that the government could force people to pay $15 an hour to all their employees, that would be better.
Yeah.
They've tricked people into thinking that saying nice things without thinking about them is virtue, and it's actually the reverse of virtue.
Because emotion is so powerful when it comes to that, and you can tell blatant lies to somebody's face, but so long as they're shrouded with emotion, it works.
Oh yeah, that's big. Well, that's what they do. That's why AOC, if you watch AOC, I wouldn't recommend putting it on with volume because it's quite horrific and shrieking, but if you just watch AOC, if you watch her body language when she's talking, it is a little bit like Hitler, and I'm not comparing her to Hitler, but in terms of the overly emotive, that everything is, this has to be happened and it has to happen now. Or you saw that thing with Greta Thunberg. Thunberg or blah, 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 blah. That's what she could blah, blah. But it's like, if you watch her, this girl, how old is she? She's like
18 now, I think.
Is she 18?
Yeah. She was 13 when this all started.
Jesus. Yeah. Well, that even proves my point. I mean, this girl is aging poorly.
Yeah.
But it's because she's going on hate. She hates all of us.
Yes.
She hates, you know, she kept saying at this speech the other day, I think it was called the Climate for Justice or Justice for Climate thing or something. She kept saying, you know, they've done it wrong. The Democrats have done it wrong. They've all done it wrong. Everyone before us has done it wrong. It's like, man, when that angry little girl gets a little bit of power, do you know what she will do to all of those people who got it wrong? And that's a very scary premise.
The sad part about her and why I differentiate her from AOC is that she's being manipulated. And that's been really sad to see a girl who was 13 years old, obviously not cognizant of really the things that she's saying and what she's advocating for, to now be 18 and doing the same thing. It just shows
you. Well, I think AOC's like, what, 34? And she's being manipulated and doesn't know what she's saying either. So I'm not giving AOC the benefit of the doubt.
You're like, I'm not going to let her slide on that one.
Yeah.
An interesting thing about your experience, obviously we both had our little shift, but you had much of your shift happen live. People got to watch you. watch you go through that progression. What is that like? And how was that received by the general public?
Well, in terms of how it was for me, I mean, I really was just saying what I thought. Like, mm-hmm. it felt like when in those 2 years when it was really happening, so like 2015, 2016, mm-hmm. right before I did the PragerU, Why I Left the Left video, mm-hmm. it was like I was just getting up there. And at the time, we were doing my show once or twice a week. I was just waking up in the morning and I was like, something ain't right. I'm just going to talk about it. Yeah. That really was it. It wasn't planned. It wasn't like premeditated. That was it. But the show started to have like a link. Like it sort of felt like a season where it was like, oh, I went, this happened, and now this next thing happened. But these things are all connected as opposed mm-hmm. to just episodic things that had nothing to do with each other. And people started kind of coming along for the ride. And a lot of people, you know, it's funny, now everybody, or not everybody, but a huge amount of people are like, yeah, the progressives are nuts. The left went crazy. Liberalism has failed. Like all the stuff that I was saying 5 years ago. And I'm not saying I was the first person ever to say it, by the way. When I sat down with Dennis for the first time, for example, mm-hmm. and he was talking about dealing with that in like the 80s, that he thought the lefties weren't acting liberal. Or I talked to David Horowitz, who was sort of the first Why I Left the Left guy. This was a guy who was a lifelong lefty, he was a son of Marxists. Mm-hmm. He was a lefty his whole life. And then in, I think, 1984 for Reagan's reelection, decided to vote for Reagan and then wrote this thing about him leaving the left in essence and the way that they treated him so horribly. And now obviously he's a big Trump guy and a conservative. But I was just honest about the thing. And then suddenly what started happening was I was getting crazy amount of hate from the left.
Yep.
Crazy. Even though I was saying, guys, we as lefties have to be better. We have to defend free speech. We have to be more open. We can't call everybody racist. I wasn't saying.
How dare you?
Right. I wasn't saying like crazy, you know, evil stuff. But I was getting an unbelievable amount of hate from the left. And then what really, I think, allowed me to take the next step mm-hmm. was I started getting all this love from these people on the right. But it wasn't that they were like, oh, I agree with you on everything. They were just like, all right, we could see you going through your process. And that's powerful. That's powerful. And then they would say, all right, Dave, well, I still disagree with you on abortion, let's say, but you seem like a nice guy. Like, you could come over for dinner.
Right.
And that feeling, so to just do that live, I think that is kind of what did put it on the map for so many people. And then, of course, I had that moment with Larry Elder that has now been seen like 500 gajillion, I think 3.5 trillion times, if I'm not mistaken.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, I think there is something super powerful about watching somebody go through their ideological progression, because so often we have these personalities who are just staunch in whatever it is that they believe. Yeah. And you got to be this fluid person that people really watched and followed you through your life. So that's amazing.
Yeah. And it really was and is real. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not bullshitting. Oh, there, I did it.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
I'm not, when I'm doing my show even, like, I really, like, I have one producer, Michael, mm-hmm. you know him. I send him stories in the morning. We have a little bit of back and forth maybe on how we're going to do it. I don't have anything scripted. I have, you know, I have the title of the story and I know if I have to throw to a video or something. But then I just share what my thought is at that moment. And mm-hmm. I don't pretend that I am something that I'm not. So if you turn on CNN, there was this moment a couple days ago where Lemon and Cuomo, they kept saying that they're real journalists, but people on the right aren't real journalists, and we don't lie. And it's like, first off, I'm not a journalist. I'm a guy that's sitting in my house telling you what I think. Whatever you want to call me is fine, but that's what I'm not pretending to be something I'm not. But the idea that Cuomo pretends, and Don Lemon and Stelter, that they pretend that they're journalists as opposed to activists, when they're just parroting Democrat talking points, when they lie about Brett Kavanaugh being a serial rapist and the Covington kids being racist and the Jesse Smollett story and Russia hoax and everything that they lie about endlessly. And then they run cover now every time Biden does something stupid, or the mm-hmm. fact that we all know he has dementia and nobody's allowed to talk about it. So it's like, I'm not pretending to be anything other than I am, and you can like it or not like it. And actually, that's just fine with me. But they're pretending. Yeah. And again, that goes to that chasm that we were talking about before. It's like, what they're doing is so different from the reality that I live in that I don't know how long a society can last in that situation. Of course. Not because I don't want to live in that society, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference.
Yeah, they're the ones who're saying they don't want to be here and they hate everything. And then we're the ones causing the problems, when clearly that's not the case.
We just want to be left alone.
Exactly.
Just leave me alone,
man.
Can
the government and the media just leave us alone?
Yeah,
that's all we want. But let's have a conversation about intent, because I view, you know, the average leftist that walks across the street and is talking about Black Lives Matter and we need to allow all legal immigration and all this stuff. I view those as people who have been manipulated by the media, and they truly have the intent of being compassionate and saving the world, yeah. which was my intent when I was on the left. But I view the Don Lemons and the Chris Cuomos and the AOCs very differently. Mm-hmm. Do you think they actually believe that they are doing something that is right, or are they aware?
So this is a great question, because no one really knows, unless I was really in their head.
Sure.
Like, no one knows the answer to that question.
Yeah.
What I can say is that I agree with you on the foot soldier part. Mm-hmm. The average young person who has been trained to not know if your genitals have something to do with your sex.
Right.
I, in a weird way, I don't blame them. They mm-hmm. grew up in a very backwards, manipulated world mm-hmm. where up is down and left and is right and good is bad and all that stuff. So I don't necessarily blame them. I have sympathy for them, and I actually think that with the right ideas, we can hopefully get them out of some of that stuff. So the real question is the guys that are driving this, that yep. lie about everything.
Right.
So Cuomo and Lemon, let's yeah. say. Like, what is in their heart of hearts?
Yes.
I used to be friends with Don. We used yeah. to hang out and go to dinner. He was not crazy.
Now,
he
not
was,
so much.
Yeah, he was not crazy. I don't know that person anymore. Mm-hmm. We never had a negative word between us. One day he just unfollowed me on Twitter, and then I took that as the sign of, okay, we're not going to be friends yeah. anymore, so be it. I would have continued that, and I think I would have been reaching out to him mm-hmm. to be like, let's heal some of this stuff. Now it's like, your question is intent, like, they have to be bad. Yeah. The intentions have to be bad. Well, in their own mind, they're good, because what they think mm-hmm. they're doing is stopping Nazis and
right.
you know, because they've become so corrupted
sure.
basically by the stuff. And so I can't besmirch the intent. I can besmirch, I suppose, the confusion that leads to it. Do I think that they wake up every day and they're like, let's do evil today?
Mm-hmm.
No, I think they have so swallowed the blue pill. They have so, like, just taken the whole bottle and just chugged it, that they genuinely look like, you know, at people like us, and they think we're bad guys trying to unleash something on society, when all we're trying to do is save the very thing that allows them to spout that nonsense yeah. in the first place.
And then you try to have the dialogue and they don't want the dialogue, yeah. which is exactly how I was. I painted this caricature of what it meant to be even a classic liberal and a conservative. And I thought, oh my gosh, these are the big boogeymen who want to, they want to see me dead. They don't want to see me be successful in this country. They want me 6 feet under.
Yeah.
And then you meet them.
You've been to my crazy right-wing parties.
Yes,
is anyone
I have.
Attacking you there?
No, or, there's yeah. no burned crosses.
No burned crosses. Oh, you left early for that one.
Yeah, but did you have that experience of stepping in and going, oh, this is nothing like what I thought this
yeah,
was going to be?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And even now, I sometimes can't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Really, like when I first, so I did the Why I Left video for PragerU.
Yeah.
Suddenly, I'm at Dennis's house smoking cigars. And I'm like, wait a minute. 2 months ago, I thought this guy was evil. I'm you know, talking with Larry Elder, and I remember listening to him on the radio when I thought he was nuts, and uh-huh. now he's not. And Shapiro, I thought, hated gays, and blah. And it's like, no, none of those things really are true. And, you know, I
yeah.
hang out with Glenn Beck, and he's like one of the best human beings on planet Earth. And none of these things are true. And that yet they'll still be, even now in 2021, if I'm at like some event, like I'll sometimes have a moment where I'm like, wow, I really am part of this. I can't mm-hmm. I can't believe I'm part of this. And it just doesn't matter if we have political disagreements.
Right.
It does not matter.
Yeah, and when you enter the world, it is very small. You find out very quickly that everybody
yeah.
is just sort of,
yeah.
which I learned very quickly. But I get asked this question a lot, and it's, was there a certain moment where you realized, oh, I'm going down this rabbit hole of I'm changing my ideology? Did you have that moment at all?
I mean, there were a couple moments, like seminal moments for me, where things mm-hmm. really like ramped up. So the Larry Elder moment's like the most famous one for me.
Yes.
Two others that I describe in the book, I'll tell you one real quick,
yes.
is, you know, David Webb on SiriusXM.
Yes.
So David, who is a conservative, who I would say happens to be black. It mm-hmm. does not matter. I used to have a show on SiriusXM, and I was a lefty at the time, and I bumped into him in the hallway, and I knew he had a show because in the hallways there, it was all the studios were in glass. So I would always see this guy in his thing doing his show, and he was on a political channel, and I wanted to do that. So I said hi to him. We started chatting. He's like, yeah, why don't you? I wish I could do a David Whitman. He's like, yeah, come on. He's got that deep.
Yeah, he just got a very
come
deep.
On my show, and I will do a show. that was horrible.
Oh, we got to send that to David.
Yeah, so, how you doing, Webb? He said, come on, you know, we'll do a show. So once a week, basically, I would go on his show. I was on the left. He was mm-hmm. on the right. And we'd talk it out. And then downstairs from SiriusXM in New York City is Del Frisco's, great steak joint. We'd go down. We'd have steak. We'd have whiskey. And we became great friends. And then flash forward a year or two, I'm on the Young Turks. And so now I'm a lefty. I'm on like this far left, you know, progressive network. And they're showing a clip of David Webb. And he's on Fox at the time. And they're calling him an Uncle Tom and a sellout and all mm-hmm. of this stuff. And suddenly it hit me, man, like lightning, because it was like, wait a minute, these people who purport to be tolerant and diverse and everyone else is a racist and all of that stuff, here they see a black man who's just saying some stuff that they disagree with. He's saying some stuff about taxes, or I don't even know what we were talking about. Yeah. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
And they think that gives them license to say all of the worst things about him, to attack those motivations, to attack his immutable characteristics, in essence. They're saying he's a traitor to his skin color. I mean, that's racist. And because I knew him, it wasn't just like a guy in a box. You know what I mean? It wasn't just like guy on TV that you don't really know. It was like, this is my friend.
Yep.
This is my friend. And that was one of the moments. It was just so starkly like, who are the racists here and who is not?
And I always say when you're going to go through that change, or at least start to accept other people's opinions, it has to hit you personally.
Yeah.
And that's a strange thing. And it's really hard because we try to change people's minds on our shows and talk to people. But it really has to be a personal experience that truly affects you.
Yeah.
I remember for me at one point when I was working for the left, I was working on a project called The Groveland Four. And it was a documentary that was put out about these four black men who were wrongfully accused of rape in Florida. A horrible situation. Two of them ended up getting killed subsequently after this whole onslaught of attacking happened. And at the very same time that I was working on that project, the Brett Kavanaugh scandal happened. So I'm working on this documentary and going to show kids this and convince them of their oppression, you know, the whole spiel. And this whole Kavanaugh thing is happening in the background. I remember seeing it and being like, we are not treating him the same way we treated those four black men, in the same way that we're talking about them right now. And I went to my boss and asked him about it, and he goes, well, it's not the same. Well, why is it not the same? I mean, it's quite literally the same.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, he's a white frat boy looking dude. He definitely do it. He definitely did it. He should hang.
Wow.
He should hang. So using the words he should hang while working on a project about young black men in the lynching era of America in Florida. And I remember thinking, oh, whoa, now it's personal.
Well, that's why I'm saying what horrible things Greta Thunberg would do.
Yep.
Because think about what your boss basically said there.
Yeah.
As he's doing it. Like the irony is so thick it can't be lost. Right. It can't be lost.
Yeah.
And that is the problem when we build our parallel economy, or if we really split off into red and blue to the point where there's almost no overlap, is that the red states will basically want to be like, all right, we're doing our thing. Happy to be here. Mm-hmm. You know, you're welcome if you want to come, and you gotta be decent and, you know, not vote in all the crazies. But the other states are still going to want the stuff, because also they're so driven by jealousy. Mm-hmm. So once they see the disparate outcomes of how the societies will operate, my God, their hospitals actually work and their economies work and their roads are clean. And wait a minute, there aren't homeless people on every corner and blah, blah, blah. They're going to want in on that.
Yep.
So I don't know how you solve for that. I really don't know. I had Tucker on my show, Tucker Carlson, a couple weeks ago. We discussed it. He doesn't know. I've talked about it with a lot of our friends. Mm-hmm. And like, nobody really knows. Like, do we have to freaking build walls around states? I don't know.
Yeah.
Do we have to have national guards that are going to protect states, like, from other states? I mean, these are crazy things and not things that are fun to think about.
No.
But we are in a weird time, and I think
it's realistic at this point.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Interesting.
It is what it is.
Well, that's a semi-optimistic way to sort of close out the show.
To build a wall.
Do you have any other optimistic things that will be better to?
Yeah, good guys win in the end. That's the truth. That's the true story.
True.
It's the true story of humanity. It doesn't mean a lot of bad things don't happen. It doesn't mean a lot of unimaginably bad things don't happen.
Right.
But the human spirit figures out a way to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are so evolved now, and we are evolved, and we have so many tools to fight for the things that we want to fight for. And the real truth is, so much of the energy that is coming at us all the time, and all of this social justice stuff, it's nothing. It's being amplified by algorithms and all
Absolutely.
Those things. But just stand up to these people.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let them abuse your kids. If your kid is going to school and being taught because they're white, they're evil, or whatever it is, like, don't let them do that. Like, if enough people would, that's how it will be solved. It is not that, oh my God, we voted for the guy who I really liked and he got in there and saved me. They're not going to save you. You can save yourself. That is all you can do.
Yep. Guys,
so
do not
look. Do you have anything better to do?
Look in.
Yeah.
That's very, very true. Dave,
that's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah. Do not look up, look in. There you go. Dave, thank you so much for being on the show. Can we talk about how people can support you? I know you have your book here. You've got Locals. You've got your show.
I've got my show and I've got to go to the dentist in a half an hour.
Yes.
So I'm literally going to get a tooth, got a drill situation.
So support him to make him feel better after the dentist.
Look, I'll look in the camera right there. I only want to promote one thing, which is Locals. I think we've built something really, really great. And if you are a creator or anyone that does anything that is worthwhile that people want to subscribe to so that you can put your content there and own it and have a slick app and get push notifications out in live chat and live video streaming and make sure that big tech is not owning your life, locals.com.
Amazing. Dave, thank you so much for being on. Truly, it's a pleasure. I wish we could have done a Joe Rogan and gone for 3 hours, but
next time.
Yeah. Guys, please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single day when we go live, 2:30 PST, 5:30 Eastern. If you would like to listen to us rather than watch, you can go to Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review so that we know that you love the show and that everybody else knows that you love the show. Also, if you'd like to get a text sent to your phone to let you know when we're live, text live to 41776. That is LIVE 241776.
Real quick, we got a super chat question for Dave. I want to read. It's very quick and lighthearted still. So Steve asks, Dave, who's your favorite Star Wars character and favorite Star Wars movie?
Character? I mean, it's cliche to say Boba Fett, but you know, so much of Star Wars has been so mangled. But I would say Boba Fett. You know, from Empire. Really, you know, almost everyone says that Empire is the best movie. So yes, in terms of like movie, like top to bottom, it is the best Star Wars. However, I think the prequels are getting better and better as time goes by.
You're speaking my language.
And because there's an incredible story of power and accumulation of power and why, I mean, it's so many of the things we're talking about right now. Right. And yes, the dialogue is stiff and Hayden doesn't know how to act and all that stuff. But Revenge of the Sith is almost an absolutely perfect movie. It could have been a little bit darker. We could have slaughtered those younglings on camera. There could have been a little more of that. But it is pretty darn good.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I think the prequels are severely underrated.
They're getting better, I'm telling you. And and because the last three were so bad. Oh, and such
I don't even count those.
They don't count. And if you can remove them from your brain, if you can do that, then there's still a beauty to Star Wars.
The Men in Black Mind Eraser. Yeah.
Because, by the way, now you got me going on this. because what happened in the original Star Wars, everyone knows the story, but George Lucas was fighting the system, right? He was fighting the studios when he was doing it. So he was the rebel fighting as he was writing the story about the rebels. So that's the story that he wrote for the original three. Then he gets a little bit of money. He starts doing more, maybe bit off more than he can chew. So he ended up directing all three of the prequels. He wasn't necessarily the best director because he only had directed the first one, not Empire or Jedi. But they are what they are. They were still true to the original. Then you get Disney involved. Now you have the giant corporation involved with 800,000 people and diversity quotas. And then suddenly, you know, what's his name? Who was the black guy? I can't even remember.
John Boyega.
But what was the character?
Poe Finn.
It's also stupid.
I can't believe I remember these things.
But Finn, you know, he was supposed to have this love story with...
the Asian girl?
With Rey.
Oh, yeah.
The movies are so bad.
I didn't see the last one.
It's like I'm trying to mental
block
them.
But then they didn't, you know, in the China market, they didn't want this weird interest, so they dropped that. And then they wrote a trilogy. How do you write a trilogy without having three stories already written? They literally wrote it, J.J., then they hand it to, what's his name, who hates Star Wars, the middle guy, and then they bring it back for J.J., and that last one, he tried. Like, I kind of empathize with J.J. It's like, he tried to fix that thing, but...
I'm just, like, jaw-dropped at the sheer passion that
this
I'm hearing.
This is an epic
I don't
rant.
Even think I'm going to need Novocaine at the dentist now, because now I'm worked up.
I feel heats radiating from you right now. Well, guys, that's a perfect way to close out. We're all set here. Thank you guys so much for watching. Again, always support Dave Rubin. He's a great man.
Ah, he's all right.
Bye, guys.
Peace.